नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारद कैंटो थर्ड चैप्टर टेक्स्ट नंबर 26। एवं विमृश्य सुधियो भगवत्यनन्ते सर्वात्मना विदधते खलु भावयोगम् ते मेन दण्डमर अरहन्त्यथ यद्यमीषाम् स्यात्पातकं तदपि हन्ति उरुगाय वादः। Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Considering all these points, therefore, intelligent men decide to solve all problems by adopting the devotional service of chanting the holy names of the Lord, who is situated in everyone's heart and who is a mine of all auspicious qualities. Such persons are not within my jurisdiction for punishment. Generally, they never commit sinful activities, but even if by mistake or because of bewilderment or illusion, they sometimes commit sinful acts, they are protected from sinful reactions because they always chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Purport. In this regard, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur quotes the following verse from the prayers of Lord Brahma. Athapite deva padambu jadvaya prasadalesha nukrihita evahi janati tatvam bhagavan mahimno nachanyameko picheram vichinvan. The purport is that even though one is a very learned scholar of the Vedic Shastra, he may be completely unaware of the existence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his name, fame, qualities, and so forth. Whereas one who is not a great scholar can understand the position of the Supreme Personality of Godhead if he somehow or other becomes a pure devotee of the Lord by engaging in devotional service. Therefore, this verse spoken by Yamaraj says, Evam vimrishya sudhiyo bhagavatihi. Those who engage in the loving service of the Lord become sudhiyaha, intelligent. But this is not so of a Vedic scholar who does not understand Krishna's name, fame and qualities. A pure devotee is one whose intelligence is clear. He is truly thoughtful because he engages in the service of the Lord, not as a matter of show, but with love, with his mind, words and body. Because non-devotees may make a show of religion, but it is not very effective. Although they ostentatiously attend a temple or church, they are thinking of something else. Such persons are neglecting their religious duty and are punishable by Yamaraj. But a devotee who commits sinful acts, which he may do unwillingly or accidentally because of his former habits, is excused, and that is the value of the Sankirtan movement. Hare Krishna. So I beg the blessings of all the assembled devotees, so that I can become qualified to speak something from the Srimad Bhagavatam. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada tells a story explaining that how intelligence is very powerful. In one kingdom, some people, they start become very envious of the minister. And they come to the king and they ask the king, you know, my dear king, that this minister of yours is just so lazy. He just eats and sleeps, that's all. He's getting paid for nothing. You know, we want to really have him sacked from his position. So king, knowing the position of the citizens, he says, all right, let's see if he's really doing his job well, if he's really qualified for his position. So the king, he says, all right, let's have a competition. So he gives a test. He tells, okay, we'll give a task to weigh an elephant. Anyone who weighs an elephant and comes quickly first to me, I will declare him as qualified for the position. So, you know, all the people, they assemble together to weigh an elephant. That's easy. But when they go out to do the task, they realize that it's very difficult to weigh an elephant, because you don't have such large scales, you know, to put an elephant on. So they were really foxed. They were not knowing what to do. And they come back and they say, "My dear king, I'm sorry, we couldn't complete the task. It's not possible. How can one weigh an elephant?" So the king, then he looks at his minister and he says, "Okay, now you try this task." And then the minister goes, then half an hour he comes back and he says, "The weight of the elephant is so and so, 1.5 tons or something like that." So all the people become astonished. "How did you do that so quickly?" "That's simple," he said. "I just put the elephant on a boat and then I measured it, how much it sinks into the water. And then I took out the elephant from that boat and then I put a large boat and then again I put it with a lot of weights, calibrated weights. And then when it went down to that same level, I calculated how much is the, you know, weight that I have put on the boat. And that is equivalent to the weight of the elephant." So all the people were amazed. This is amazing. What intelligence. So Prabhupada says that buddhi yasya balam tasya. Nirbuddhestu kutha balam, he says. That wherever there is intelligence, there is strength. That's true, actually. But here, Prabhupada is now making another point. He's saying that a very intelligent scholar of the Vedic scriptures cannot understand the Vedic literatures. Vedic scholar. Now, we see even in the material world, there are so many scholars. Like the material scientists are there. They're so intelligent, doing PhDs and double PhDs. But we see in this world, the problems are created by the mundane scientists. If you see, you know, there is a case of this cows, you know, they had discovered, the scientists with their fertile brain, feed which when given to the cow would make the cows very fat and strong so that they can get more flesh out of the cow for slaughter. So they prepared that feed, fed it to the cows, and the cows started eating them and they indeed started becoming very fat. But later on they discovered that the cow's meat had become poisonous. And when the human beings would eat that meat, they would have holes in their brain. So they called this disease, called as mad cow disease. And then they identified all the cows which had been infected by this fodder. And then they killed all the cows. And what was that feed? That feed was pulverized bone of slaughtered cows. They were feeding to the cows. So that was the intelligence of the scientists, in the way in which they were using it. So as someone rightly said, devotee, that it should not be called as a mad cow disease, but a greedy, lusty, envious man disease, madman disease. Because actually, even though they are having all this intelligence, but where are they utilizing it for? In such horrendous, you know, nonsensical purposes. So that is the case, that even though there is intelligence, one cannot really understand the Vedic literatures. Now, so many such things, like, you know, in the material scientists, you see so many things, so many accomplishments. You know, like in Europe, there was a black plague, and 1/3 of the population was wiped out. And the scientists started applying their intelligence. What's the cause? What's the cause? And they discovered, yes, at last, the cats are the cause of the problem. So they killed all the cats, and then they realized that the disease doubled. Then they realized, what's wrong? Let's go back, do our homework. And they found out the problem was not the cats, the problem was the rats. And then they, because the cats were killed, the rat population multiplied. The cats were doing a good job and they killed the cats. And then they killed all the rats. 1/3 of the population of Europe was wiped out because of this black plague caused due to rats. And the scientists, with their enormous intelligence, made mistakes. Such a great blunder in the history of of mankind. So we see that mundane intelligence is good, but you cannot understand even material subject matters with this mundane intelligence. And what to speak of transcendental subject matters like understanding spirit or God, who is adokshaja, beyond our mind and intelligence. And little when we come up to the pious side, those people who are a little more pious, followers of Vedic literatures, like Prabhupada would quote one ex-president of India, who used to give commentaries on Bhagavad Gita. He would translate the verses, you know, anukulyasya sankalpa. And he would say, well, you know, we should be good to everyone. Something like that. He would not translate it as surrender to Krishna. Or when Krishna says, sarva dharman parityaja mam ekam sharanam vraja, then he would translate it as, well, Krishna is trying to say surrender to the unborn, unmanifest within me. Not to Krishna, but to that unmanifest. So Prabhupada would say, this is just see. The enormous learning and the double degrees and PhDs that this person has actually gained is being used to misinterpret and concoct and speculate and screw out different kind of meanings from the Vedic literatures and just miss the point. What is that point? Surrender to Krishna. So this is a very important principle that actually material intelligence cannot get us anywhere in spiritual life. Like we see in the Shastras, there are various such examples of Duryodhan, Kamsa, Jarasandh, who are highly, highly empowered, intelligent people. But still, they lack one thing, that is surrender to Krishna. It is explained that when Krishna approached the Pandavas, taking the message of the Pandavas to Hastinapur to give the message of peace to the Kauravas, he reached there and he was welcomed by the sons Duryodhan, Dushasan, and everyone, made him sit, gave him a very opulent seat. And Duryodhan told Krishna, come, please come to my house. I want to treat you with the best of the facilities I have. I have prepared Dushasan's special palace, which is far more opulent than even mine. So Krishna looked at him and he said, look, I am a messenger. Unless a messenger does not accomplish his mission, it's not advisable for a messenger to eat at that person's place. So you fulfill my desire. And Krishna extended his hand to Duryodhan. He said, you fulfill my desire and rest assured, I will come to your house. I will accept. He said, no, but still, I have the desire to please you, no matter what. Surely you're not partial. I know that you're not partial. You should not be partial. You are siding the Pandavas. It doesn't seem like that. You're not partial. You should come to my house. So Krishna said, I am not partial, there's no doubt about that, but I do not separate motives from actions. Your actions speak that you have love for me, but in reality you don't have any love for me. Because if you had, then you would have agreed to my proposal. If you would have had love for me, then you would have been friendly to the Pandavas. And Pandavas are the greatest devotees, the most virtuous people. There's no reason for you to be envious of him. And being so qualified, he's actually the rightful heir to the throne. But still you're not giving him the throne. That proves that you are envious of them. And anyone who's envious towards my devotees is envious towards me. And I'm not favorable towards them. So Duryodhan became very angry. But he was biting his lips and pretending as if everything is okay. It's all right. Next day again he comes, Krishna. And again he puts up his proposal. And at that time great rishis come to that. It is explained in Mahabharata. Great rishis, Narada, Kanva, Parashuram, it seems, comes to the assembly hall of the Kauravas. And Krishna again speaks, puts up the proposal. And Dhritarashtra chastises his son, Duryodhan, for saying that, my foolish son, why aren't you complying to the request of Krishna? Whatever he is saying is the truth. Just surrender, give up your obstinacy. But Duryodhan does not comply. Then Parashuram, supreme incarnate of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he makes a suggestion and he says that you should, because he narrates a story that many millions of years ago there has been two great rishis. Their name was Nara Narayana. And they were very powerful. And there was a great king and very obstinate and powerful, just like you, Duryodhan. His name was King Dambodbhava. He was so powerful that he could not have anyone to match with his strength. So he went here and there to find out who is the person to contend with him. But he could not find anyone. So ultimately he hears that here are two powerful rishis who are the most powerful of everyone. So he approaches Nara and says, I want to contend with you in fight. So Nara says, we have got other important business. I'm not interested. But he insists that, no, I want to fight with you. I challenge you. And Nara says, all right, you get all your strength, all your weapons, all your armies, and we'll have a fight. So Dambodbhava gets all his army. And Nara, it's explained by Parshuram, that he just picks up a few blades of grass, chants mantras and throws it in the air, and those blades of grass, by the power of mantra, just break up into thousands and millions of arrows and completely wipe out the army of Dambodbhava. And Dambodbhava was forced to surrender to Nara. And Parashuram says that this Nara is not as powerful as Narayan. Narayan didn't even get up from his seat. Now these two same personalities are here, and one Narayan who's here, Krishna who's sitting in this assembly hall, is none other than that Narayan, and Arjun is none other than that Nara. So you foolish person, Duryodhan, it is really time that you contemplate on this and surrender to the request of Krishna, otherwise you'll be the cause of the destruction of your whole dynasty. So even though he was advised like that by great sages, Parashuram and all these, Kanva Rishi and all those, but he could not comply. And then later on he goes to the extent of capturing Krishna, and Krishna could not be captured. He showed his universal form and tells Duryodhan, "You fool, how can you capture me? I am the Supreme Lord." And that time Duryodhan started thinking that, oh, he's just some kind of Mayavi, some kind of a magician, but he cannot be God, he cannot be Bhagavan. So we see that a person who is actually envious, who does not surrender to Krishna, even though he may be having pratyaksha of Krishna, personally he cannot actually understand who God is. Many people, when they come to spirituality, they insist on seeing God, show me God, then I will believe in him. But here we see examples of Duryodhan seeing God but not able to understand him. Principle being that surrender is a very necessary criteria in order to understand Krishna consciousness. So we see that in the purport, Prabhupada writes that even an unintelligent person can actually understand Krishna consciousness. Now a classic example is there in the Chaitanya Charitamrita of a South Indian Brahmin in Sri Rangam, sitting in right in front of the Bhagavad Gita and trying to, you know, read. And he didn't know how to read. And all the very intelligent, learned Vedic scholars who were also Brahmins by birth, they all came there and started making fun of him, teasing him. And while reading, he was shedding tears of ecstasy. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu happened to cross by, and he comes and looks at this South Indian Brahmin, and he feels, who's this person? And he goes and asks him, "My dear Brahmin, what are you doing? Why are you shedding tears reading the Bhagavad Gita?" So the Brahmin, he says in his words, "Vipra kahe murkha ami shabdhartha na jani shuddha shuddha gita padi guru agya mani." He says like that. He says that shuddha shuddha gita padi, that I make mistakes. I don't know how to read actually. Sometimes it's proper, sometimes it's not proper. Actually, I'm illiterate. But only that I'm doing this only to guru agya mani, because my spiritual master has instructed me to do so. So I'm just doing it. So actually, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in the conclusion of this pastime, actually tells him that you have perfected your life, actually. You have understood the essence of the Bhagavad Gita. You are the person, not those people who are, you know, loitering around as being very intelligent, not they. But actually, you have understood the Bhagavad Gita. Now, why? Because of the quality of surrender. Because, as we learn here, a very essential qualification, that material surrender to spiritual master. Even though he was unintelligent, he could understand. So what really matters is obedience, as it is said. Obedience and the devotion which Krishna sees. Like, you know, there is a story of a small boy who goes to the church. And he goes to the church and he starts reading out, you know, A, B, C, D, like that. And the father comes and he says, "Hey, what are you doing?" He says, "I'm just, you know, just learned A, B, C, D, so I'm coming here too, you know, for the pleasure of the Lord, just to show him how much I've learnt in school." The father says, "Get away from here. Why you? This is not the place to do your homework." So the boy, he goes away. And then that night, the Lord speaks to this father. He says, "The prayers that you're chanting is nothing, no better than ABCD for me. Because there's no devotion in your prayers. If there's no devotion, then your prayers are nothing but the assembly of, you know, compilation of ABCD. It's just letters. That's all. What really matters, what I accept, is actually the devotion. That boy's ABCD made more sense to me than your eloquent prayers. It's really having no meaning." So this is very essential, basic principle, that actually what the Lord sees is the mood, actually. So once Srila Prabhupada was sitting in his room, and he hears some singing going on, coming from the temple hall. And Prabhupada hears the singing and he says, "Ah, who's that demon who's singing?" And all the disciples, they go and find out. And he was some professional, you know, and he was singing in very, you know, aesthetics, and he was like a lot of flair and a lot of ornamentation in his singing. Prabhupada said, "Stop him, stop him. Get some other devotee to sing." Indicating that actually that person has not singing with devotion, even though he had the art, but he lacked devotion. So this is the essence, actually. Prabhupada would say in one pastime, when his disciples would call him in the initial days, "Guru, Guru," and would say, "Guru Maharaj, Guru," they say. Prabhupada said, "Guru, you know what Guru means? Guru means a bull. You are calling me Guru. I am not a bull. I am Guru. I am a spiritual master. But you are calling me Guru. I am not a bull. But still, I accept your sentiments because I know that you don't intend to call me bull. But nevertheless, I accept." So just like that, Krishna is also in the mood of devotees, in the mood of Krishna, accepting the mood and not the letters behind what we give and offer to the Lord. We have on the other hand this wonderful, you know, when the devotees were doing Bhakti Shastri last year, I still remember when His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj came to the room and he brought one photograph into the examination hall and he kept it there of Rom Harshana Sutta. And he quoted this verse, and Rishere Bhagavato Bhutva Shishyo Dita Bhavnicha Setihasa Puranani Dharma Shastrani Sarvashah. Balaram, he's speaking to Rom Harshana Sutta. Rishere Bhagavato Bhutva Shishyo Dita Bhavnicha Setihasa Puranani Dharma Shastrani Sarvashah Adantasya Vinitasya Vritha Pandita Maninaha Na Gunayana Bhavantisma Natasya Vachitatminaha. He's saying, "Rishir Bhagavata Bhutva, you are the disciple of great sage Vyasa and you are learned Setihasa, Purana, Dharma Shastra, everything you have read and memorized perfectly. That's no very good." But he says that you have not, na gunayana bhavanti sma, you have not developed any qualities. So he's saying that adantasya vinitasya, you have not controlled your senses. And Vritha Pandita Maninaha, you are considering yourself very learned. But na gunaya na bhavanti sma, you have not developed any qualities. Natasyeva jitatmanaha, you are just like an actor on a drama stage, you know, doing some drama, but actually you have not somehow brought the message within your heart. So Balaram, he actually took that blade of grass, saying like this, quoting this verse, he touched the body of Rom Harshana Sutta and he was killed. Now, he was not a great demon, in the words of Radhana Swami Maharaj. He was saying that he was not a great demon. He was a learned scholar. He was a great learned scholar. He was not even a Rakshasa or like Putana or Trinavarta, whom Krishna and Balaram had killed, Denukasur and all those demons. He was empowered by Vyasa. He was empowered by all the assembled sages who were there to hear Srimad Bhagavatam. And he's speaking Srimad Bhagavatam. And all he did was not give respect to Balaram by getting up when all the assembled Vaishnavas did, and Balaram was so furious that he went and killed him straight away, indicating that how actually imbibing the quality and not material intelligence can actually reveal the essence of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So in that same mood, Prabhupada says in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, he says, "Tad vag visargo janataga viplavo Yasmin pratishloka abhadyavattapi namananta shayishton kitaniyat shrinvanti gayanti krinanti sadhavaha." So Prabhupada, he courses, and when we are doing Bhakti Shastri, it was explained that this actually represents the mood of Srila Prabhupada. When he was translating Srimad Bhagavatam, he knew that actually his translations would, you know, have problems, because people would find faults in these translations because of the language in which he is presenting. It is not his language and there are going to be faults. But he said that even though the language cannot be actually perfect, may not be perfect, but the message can be taken in the right spirit. Why? Because this is a message or instruction given by Vyasa when he criticized, when he was criticized by Narada for composing all the Vedic literatures. And he said that you have made all these Vedic literatures, but it's of no use. It's of no use. What is important is the content. So in this it is explained that even though the message content is, even if the presentation may be wrong or bad or not very appealing, but still the content is what has to be accepted. So it is accepted by the sadhavas, by the devotees. It may not be appreciated by the non-devotees, because all they look for is, you know, the externals. But the real genuine people will actually appreciate the intention and the message that has been, that is being conveyed. Like recently I was just visited home and I put on the television and I found that it was, you know, I mean, my father had put it on for me to just see what are the channels he's watching. So he watches the Samskar channel. So full of, you know, all these eloquent speakers coming and presenting the Bhagavatam actually. And some speakers actually so eloquent that before beginning the class they would cry. During the class they would cry. And after the class everyone is crying. Amazing. Spellbound, everyone. And my father would see, say, just see, amazing speaker. And I would look at him and I would say, oh, okay. So why don't you should also watch. You should keep a, you know, update of what's going on. So thing is, the materialists actually, they look a lot about, these external things. But what really matters is the content. Not how we say things, but actually what is being said. It's like that. So as in one class, Prabhuji was saying that, you know, when Krishna was entering Dwarka, you know, the gopis would be gossiping. And it's explained that generally ladies have, it seems, that tendency to gossip. So the simple gossip of the ladies was far more pleasurable to Krishna than the eloquent poetries and the hymns chanted from the Sam Veda. Krishna finds it very boring. It seems when the prayers of the Vedas was being spoken, Krishna went to sleep. Krishna actually slept. But the simple gossip of these gopis, it seems, was actually very well taken, was appreciated by Krishna. Oh, it's very palatable. So, we see that in the pastime of Duryodhan, he was just not surrendering. That was the problem. He was not surrendering. So therefore, surrender comes with obedience. When we obey the instructions of the spiritual master, that is surrender. So, when we surrender, we are aligning our intentions, our desires with the desires of that of the spiritual master. And if we disobey the instruction of the spiritual master, then we start to develop an independent mentality. There's a tendency for the sadhaka to think that, okay, you know, ultimately the spiritual master is also a conditioned soul. As long as he's following the instructions, he thinks the desires of the spiritual master is that of mine. But when he disobeys, then it becomes a very dangerous situation. And he may start developing separatist mentality and he may start thinking that, you know, well, ultimately it's for the project. And you see that even after disobeying, you see the project is flourishing and that's very good. So, you know, after all, the spiritual master is also a man from this material world and he may not be materially perfect, he may make mistakes. So ultimately, you know, intentions really matters. But actually obedience is very important for self. If we lack on that, then what happens is a separatist mentality. So the result is lack of faith, a loss of faith, which may actually may bring about a bigger project, but the thing is that it may result in lack of faith ultimately and a subsequent fall down from spiritual life. Therefore, when Srila Prabhupada was approached by one of his disciples who apparently was having problems with his married life, and he approached Srila Prabhupada and said, Prabhupada, you know, I'm just not doing well with my married life. I want a divorce. Prabhupada said, okay. Yeah, he gave his blessings in one sense. So the disciples were shocked at Prabhupada and said, how come you always advocate that divorce is not good and you must... They said, what could I do? Even if I told him, don't divorce, he would have divorced. But I said, I gave him the blessings because at least he would have the credit of following the instructions of spiritual master. Because if I had not given him permission, he would have in any case divorced. And that was a mess. And another thing was, bigger mess was that he would not follow my instructions and they would ultimately fall down. But now at least there is some hope. So the spiritual master, taking into consideration the advancement of the disciple, gives also instructions according to how much that disciple can actually take. So an intelligent disciple, knowing what actually is the heart of the spiritual master, you know, reciprocates the spiritual master in that mood, exhibiting greater surrender and asking for greater and greater, instructions, higher instructions for progressing in spiritual life. So, when there is obedience, then there is development of faith, and faith can develop. And when there is faith, then there is advancement in spiritual life. Faith is the foundation. And we can see that so much in the life of Srila Prabhupada, how much he was like, you know, grounded in the faith on his spiritual master and the Shastras. In 1969, most historical moment in the history of man, humanity, when man sent the, you know, three men to the moon mission. And at that time, Srila Prabhupada was sitting and all the disciples were also assembled in the hall, in a room, and the television was on. And all the disciples were so excited to see that, ooh, man landing on the moon, Srila Prabhupada. And one of the disciples of Prabhupada was massaging the head of Srila Prabhupada. And at time to time, he would forget massaging the head, and Prabhupada look at him, come on, what are you doing? So this was spoken by one of the disciples of Srila Prabhupada in Vrindavan. You know, if I remember correctly, Shrutakirti Prabhu was massaging the head of Srila Prabhupada. And every time he would, you know, massage, he would become so carried away by that, you know, scene that, you know, that Neil Armstrong, you know, taking his first step on that moon's lunar surface and speaking the words, one small step for man and a giant leap for mankind. And he would stop massaging Srila Prabhupada, and Prabhupada would look at him and he says, and then again he would, you know. So at that time, Prabhupada was just not affected. And all this whole world at that time was glued to the television to see what a historical event. And at that time, Prabhupada was not the least affected. So what is it? How does the moon look like? Prabhupada, just see. The astronauts are saying that the moon just looks like, you know, like a desert, like powdery sand there. So Prabhupada said, then that's probably where they have gone. To the desert. Not the moon. Prabhupada was unaffected, completely in the face of the whole world, you know. And the disciples are looking at Prabhupada and say, Prabhupada, we are seeing it. It's on the television, and they have not gone to the moon. It's a farce. Prabhupada was completely grounded. And in fact, before that, he wrote the book, Easy Journey to Other Planets. If you want to go to the moon, he said, you have to go by the Vedic process. He was having complete faith on the Vedic literatures. Not the slightest doubt that maybe so many people are believing, maybe I made a little mistake in my assumption. Maybe it's not so. Prabhupada was grounded and rooted in his faith in the Vedic literatures. He was not at all. And also we see that how when he went to the West and he preached the holy names, many, you know, disciples, God brothers of Srila Prabhupada actually mentioned that the one quality which Srila Prabhupada possessed was unflinching faith on the power of the holy name. And we see that when Srila Prabhupada went, just kirtans, and he was having faith that it's the holy name which will deliver the people. I'm just a servant of the holy name, servant of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So that faith actually brought him through. And recently we were discussing, and Karang Prabhu was telling, reading out from that book, Memories, recited by one of the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. And he was saying that once it so happened that one in India, when many sannyasis, disciples of Srila Prabhupada was there, one lady, she came from abroad. And for a long time, the devotees had not eaten cake. So she had brought cake. And all the sannyasis at that time, they said, we are sannyasis, we deserve the first rites on the cake. And they were pushed all the devotees aside and they pounced on the cake and they took the cake and they started eating and relishing the cake to their heart satisfaction, only to find out that the cake was actually stale as a result. But still they enjoyed it because it was a long time, long separation. So nevertheless they enjoyed it, and very soon they were on the ground holding their stomachs and rolling on their backs with pain. And the disciple ran to Prabhupada and said, Prabhupada, these sannyasis, they're on the ground. So what happened? They ate the stale cake and they're poisoned. Should we dash them to the doctor? Prabhupada said, no, forget it. Just give them some charanamrit. Said, what, Srila Prabhupada? Just give them some charanamrit, it seems. And they just gave him charanamrit and he was cured. They were cured now. By drinking charanamrit, something which we do every day. And it's so potent. It's so powerful. And Prabhupada had that faith, and we can see that manifesting in the effects. So in this pastime, we see that how this southern Brahman was actually obeying the orders of a spiritual master. And he goes to say, Arjunera Ratha Krishna Hayar Judhar Vasiya Chehate Totra Shyamal Sundar. So now he's explaining the cause for his ecstasy when he was asked. He said that when I contemplate on the mercy and the compassion and the bhaktavatsal characteristics of the Lord, that he's driving the chariot of his devotee, the jivatma, an ordinary jivatma who's insignificant, my heart melts and I just cry and weep. I cannot just tolerate this. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says that actually, he says, Yavat padon tavat pana tanra darshan ei lage gita pathana chhade moraman. So Brahman says that just by remembering this, I just cannot stop reading this Srimad Bhagavatam. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu tells him, Prabhu kahe gita pathe tomarahi adhikar tumi se na se jana ei gitar arthasar. You are the person actually who have understood the essence of the Bhagavad Gita, even though you don't know how to read and write. So that is the essence. So later on, then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu raises him, lifts him up, and embraces him. And he says, Toma dekhi, eta bali sei vipre kaili alingan, Prabhu pad dhari vipra karena rodhan. And he starts weeping in ecstasy, the Brahman. And he says, Toma dekhi, taha haite dvi guna sukha hai, sei Krishna tumi hena mora manlay. He says, after embracing you, I am seeing, I am perceiving that my ecstasy has doubled. Then he says, Krishna spurte tandra man hanache nirmal ateva prabhur tatva janila saka. The mind of the Brahman was purified by the revelation of Lord Krishna, and therefore he could understand the truth of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in all details. So he says, Toma dekhi sei Krishna tumi hena mora mana hoy. Mane hoy, he says that you are only Krishna. I know that. You are Krishna. You are Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is actually originally Krishna. So he could understand that he was Krishna. The deep secrets of the identity of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was revealed to this person. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu tells him, please don't tell this to anyone. So in the purport, Prabhupada says that a pure devotee is one whose intelligence is clear. He is truly thoughtful because he engages in the service of the Lord, not as a matter of show, but with love. But with love. And he says that how the people of other religions ostentatiously attend a temple or church, but they are thinking of something else. So we see this, kind of a theme is taken in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, where Narad Muni is chastising Vyasadeva. He says, Jugupsitam dharma krite nushashata svabhava raktasya mahavyatikrama. He's telling, Jugupsitam, condemnable is your activity. Because Vyasa had written all the Vedic literatures and he was very despondent. After writing all the Vedic literatures, but he was despondent. So he was contemplating, why am I despondent? And Narada comes there and he smiles and tells him, Jugupsitam, that condemnable your activity of having written all these Vedic literatures where you have only mentioned Karmakanda, Vedic ritualistic sacrifices. This is no good. This is no good because you have given something to them, to the conditioned souls for which they have natural inclination in the garb of religion. So that is not acceptable. Just like he gives an example, Prabhupada, that when a diseased person is there, like say a diabetes or something, then naturally he's attracted to sweets. He wants to eat sweets. That's his natural inclination. And if the doctor says, okay, you can eat sweets, so that's not very good. So the thing is that Narad Muni explained the principle can be understood, that he told that it's not very good what you have presented. You must present Srimad Bhagavatam, the glories of Sri Krishna. Only then can it satisfy conditioned souls, not these Vedic ritualistic sacrifices to go to the heavens. That is not. So Srimad Bhagavatam makes it very clear what is religion. Religion means Savai Pumsam Parodharmo Yato Bhakti Radokshaje Ahituki Apratihata Yayatma Suprasidati. That right from the beginning, it kicks out all sub-religious principles, establishes complete unmotivated, complete selfless service to Krishna. Not some compromised religion. Like I heard in one religion, if you perfect that religion, it is explained that that soul will be welcomed at the gates of heaven by 6 virgin girls. That's a perfection, it seems. That's a So that is the motivation. You see, oh, wow, wonderful. I do tapasya now. I do religion now. And I very ostentatiously go to the temple or a church and I do all these things. And then ultimately for what? For that thing which is kept beyond this life. So I can give my life. I can, you know, do any havoc. I can kill myself. I can kill others. And I can still be enjoying later on. So the austerity now for happiness later. For sense gratification later, basically. Prabhupada said that's not really great. I mean, even a child does austerity. You see, children, if you don't give them sweets, then they'll do tapasya. They'll follow austerities. What is that? I won't eat. I won't eat. And then what will happen? When the mother feels, oh, he's not doing anything, okay, let me give him some sweets. And then he gets a sweet and he's happy. So their tapasya now is only for some sense gratification later. So the principle here is very important. That Prabhupada explains that Srimad Bhagavatam can be understood, the topmost religious principle can be understood not with material intelligence, and but with surrender. So he says, but a devotee who commits sinful acts which he may do unwillingly or accidentally because of his former habits is excused. It is said the person who is following topmost religion, even if he falls down, he is still excused. But a person who in the garb of religion is doing something, sub-religious principles, if he falls down, or even if he is practicing, he is liable to be punished. So what is the message? Ultimately, Prabhupada says that we have to actually be careful that we don't fall down, even though... And Prabhupada gives an example, analogy of a mother with a child, that when the child commits a mistake, still the parents forgive him. Why? Because mistake is what? Something done unknowingly, unintentionally. So what is appreciated is the intention. He didn't actually mean to fall down, but actually he fell down. So similarly, Krishna sees that, okay, he fell down because a person who's following devotional service, who's executing devotional service, his intention is to serve. It's not to fall down. Intentionally, he doesn't do that. But when he falls down, Krishna says, that doesn't matter, really. No problem. He still cares for that devotee. So what is condemned is when one willingly falls down. That is condemnable. So we can see in the pastime of Narada that how he describes that what is the reason how he established the perfection of his devotional practice. He explains that when he was young, he was gentle. He had served the Bhakti Vedanta's devotees. He was strong in his faith. He was sense controlled and he followed the Bhakti Vedantas, and lastly he was attached to them. So these are the six very essential principles for perfecting a devotional practice, which Narada recommends for all of us. Attachment. So when we are attached to devotees and attached to Krishna, then actually we develop a relationship with Krishna. We can enter into the secrets of Krishna. Just like, you know, when we have, children, when we are in Gurukul, we see them playing Sakli. You know, the game Sakli is like one person goes to catch the others. And when he catches one, then he holds his hand and goes to catch the third person. And when he makes him out, he catches his hand and makes a bigger Sakli, and the Sakli goes on increasing, the chain goes on increasing. And the more the length of the chain increases, the more difficult it is to escape being caught. So similarly, when the devotees, when they attach to devotees and they make a Sakli, hold hands and catch Krishna, Krishna can be caught. It's very difficult for Krishna to escape. Krishna cannot run. But that Sakli is that of love and affection. The bondings between devotees. And the whole parampara system is that long Sakli, that chain of devotees they have made in order to capture that Lord. But the only difference is in that Sakli, they're not holding hands, but they're holding each other's feet. But now the question comes, how can someone run by holding the feet? That's possible in devotional service. That's possible in devotional. And that's how we can capture Krishna. That's possible by Krishna. So I'll stop here this time. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Bhaktavrinda ki jai. Gaur Premanande Hari Hari Bo.